Okay, and where do you live?
8300 Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, that's a good address. It sounds like a movie.
Yeah,
Los Angeles. Angeles, California.
Right.
Okay. And what year did you come to America?
1900.
1900 came to the United States. What year did you come to Pittsburgh?
Same year.
Came direct. And which village or town or city did you come from in your
Subak
province? What was the name of your town?
The town was a little tiny town. It was called Krasnopole.
Krasnopole. That means beautiful town.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's all the information I need for the back here. That's going to be beautiful background. Okay. Do you want to tell me the date of your birth?
Well, I didn't remember it is, and I made my own date. It was October 8th, 1890.
Uh-huh. That means that you're about 7 months younger than my mother. That means you're going to be 80. You're 79 and a half.
Yeah.
And you came in 1890, and you were 10 years old.
Well, it was 9 years.
You were 9 years old.
I came here in July, and I was 10 in October.
Mm-hmm. You came in July 1900. Now, was your town or village or whatever you want to call it, about how many people would you say lived there? You said it was a very tiny little place.
It's about between 200 and 300, I suppose.
Were they all Jewish?
No. There was on the outskirts where the coin.
Oh, but you can include them in the 200 to 300?
No, Jewish people.
It was Jewish. It was a shtetl.
A shtetl, yeah.
Okay.
Mit a shul, mit a...
Mm-hmm.
Mit a board.
Ein shul.
A besemetash.
A besemetash. And this was the main shul of the whole village.
One big shul.
There were no shtiblach or klois or...
Well, the klois, what you think? Or the in the Besamedash.
One building.
Yeah. No, it was two.
Two buildings?
Yeah, the shoe, the Gracie, I get more at the shoe.
Uh-huh.
And then they give them the
Besamedash. Oh, tell me about the shoe. I get more at the shoe, you mean a really big building?
Steinen shoe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who was your rabbi there? Did you have a rabbi in
there? Oh, yeah. Sheikha.
You had a rabbi? One rabbi?
One rabbi.
Do you remember his name? You were only 9 years old.
Yeah.
Ask a kid of nine today with it.
Yeah, 70 years ago.
Was there a dayan, or the rabbi took care of all the problems?
All the problems.
Okay. How many people lived in the house with you?
I guess you weren't... my father was in America when I remember.
Really? When you were very little, you came to America already?
Yeah. It was 4 years and I was nine.
Mm-hmm.
It means 5 years
uh-huh.
when we left.
Mm-hmm. And how many brothers and sisters?
Well, we were four children.
Mm-hmm.
Three girls and one boy.
Mm-hmm.
The boy's still living, the others are all gone.
Mm-hmm.
Out of eight.
What was your maiden name?
It was, the first name you mean?
No, your maiden name.
My maiden name was, Ruskovsky, whatever they called us then. We made it Price when we got here. We changed it.
Any relation to Price's dress shop?
Yeah. It's an acquired name.
Yes, I know. You think they were born with that name?
Ruskovsky.
Okay. Now, what does Ruskovsky mean? Do you have any idea? No, that was your family name.
For my because his father's name, my father's name, and so forth.
What kind of house did you live in as a little girl? Do you remember anything about the house, what it looked like?
No, dilapidated from God knows when it was built.
Mm-hmm.
Of two rooms.
Mm-hmm. Built out of what?
I guess it was wood.
Mm-hmm.
Mit a streitem Dach.
How did your mother manage to take care of the children and everything when her husband was in America? Did he send money?
now they're coming to their real, to the Gedichte wie mich so. My father, when they were married very young, about 17. My father already had two children when he was called to the army. He served the Tsar for 5 years. When he came back, he had no trade. They made him as a blacksmith. In the army. When he came back, he had no trade or nothing.
Couldn't he work as a blacksmith?
Well, then he had to go to the country. He did that, and he was put out. So we came to the city.
That was when the Jews were chased out of the country?
Chased out of the country. And this is when I was born. In that 1 year where he tried to build a shop in the country, and they didn't allow, they broke the windows, made a pogrom upon us. Broke the windows out, tore the pillars and pyramids, whatever there was. Out on the cross the street was a big lake, the olive wood lake. And we saw all like snow on the water was flying, the feathers. And mother had a tiny baby in her arms.
That was and you?
My mother.
But the baby was you?
No. Oh. No. That baby died in her arms, walking on the road to her parents in the other country home. It is a village. The village was mostly going. And by the time she came, that she went to nurse the baby, she found that the baby was dead after she nursed. Then we struggled along. We went to the city in Suwalk, and he was trying to work here and there with a baker and with this one and that one. They couldn't get enough work.
Well, so Krasnopol is not where you were born. Krasnopol is where you spent your childhood.
Yeah, the 5 years there. So there, the baker had pity upon him, and he loaned him a couple $100, I think, ruble, I suppose, and he says, you young man, go to America. You're young, you're healthy, you can work hard, you got a little family, in due time, you can send for them, they'll come for you. And you go.
Were there other young people from your village who had already gone to America?
Yeah, there was a lot, quite a few, that happened the same destiny happened to them as it happened to us.
What language do you speak at home?
Yiddish.
Yiddish. Did you ever speak any Lithuanian or Russian?
No, it was mostly Polish there.
That area was Polish?
Yeah, that area.
Did you know any Polish when you were a child?
Oh, as a child.
Did your family?
Yeah, oh yeah, mother and father both spoke Polish and Russian.
Because your father was in the army, of course,
yeah,
so he was Russian.
He spoke Russian. Mm-hmm. And the mother spoke Russian. But
Did your father belong to any organizations, like the Zionists or the Bund or the Socialists?
No, at that time there wasn't any in that little town. I suppose not, because he never spoke of it.
Mm-hmm. Were you friendly with any non-Jewish people in your area?
Europe?
No, I mean in Krasnopol, did you have any friends who were not Jewish, or did you?
I was playing with the gypsies out there.
You played with
them? Yeah, we played, and they sang songs. I still remember the song that I used to sing. Go seesaw on big boards outside of the fallen houses.
Oh, these were little, was this in Krasnopol, or this was in the rural area?
Yeah.
This was in Krasnopol.
Yeah.
I still remember.
Yeah.
How would you describe the relationship with the government of your country? Was it friendly to the Jews?
Oh, who was friendly in Poland or in Russia? Friendly to the Jews, my God.
What kind of schooling did you get?
In fact, none. I went the first time they had made a shkola, what they call. The first day I come home, I got scalded. And I was in bed for a year. I never thought I'd recover. Mother cooked for me a good meal because I started this shkola.
It was a government school that they started.
I suppose, yeah.
Yeah.
because they spoke Russian there, Russian and Polish. So. That upstairs, honey. When you.
Okay, we were on this schooling that you went
to
Shkola, and that was it.
That was it.
Did you learn any Yiddish or Hebrew?
No.
No cheder.
No cheder. There was Fidori,
English.
Boys.
Did you learn at home from somebody?
Mother taught me the Malafes.
She did?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
And were you able to read a little bit in the Siddur or something?
In the Siddur, but I had forgotten it.
Mm-hmm.
I had to start from scratch, a self-educator.
Mm. Was there any discussion about Eretz Yisrael?
Oh, Alamol. You have to say about your inheritance.
No, yeah, but I didn't mean that. I mean, do you know of any people who actually went to Stebbel?
No, I don't remember that.
Do you know if anybody went from your area to South Africa?
There were two men that they left their wives and children with their business. The wife had a little store, a grocery store, the other had some other kind of business. And the husbands always traveled, and they went all over, I would say, America or South America. About twice a year they'd come home.
What about South Africa? Because that was settled by Lithuanian Jews from various Lithuanian provinces.
I don't remember where exactly where. I was too young.
Okay. Yeah, no, I understand. Why did you leave the country in which you were born? Your father sent
us. How he sent for us. This is the...
Yes, tell me.
Well, this money was just enough to come to New York. In New York, he got a job someplace, I don't remember where.
And he came in, 1895 he came, because you were 5 years old. He came in 1895 to America. He came
95 or 90, or 96.
Yeah,
okay. And he couldn't keep a job because he didn't work on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the time, he went looking for a job and he couldn't get it. So they told him that in Pittsburgh, here, there's a lot of mills, a lot of mines, a lot of work. And it was a year of, they called it a panic.
Ah, 1897 was the panic.
Well, he came here, and you see, it was a year in New York, and so forth.
Somebody told him there's work in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. So whatever he could, he scraped up a little money, and he came from New York to Pittsburgh. And he went into the mill. The mill... They would give him a job, but he had to work on Saturday. Again, he was out of work. So Pittsburgh had to make the city or the state had to do something for those poor people that had no job and no money. So they put up kitchens, free a kettle of soup in the middle of the street,
mm-hmm.
and whoever came with a cup or a bowl, they got some soup. And strong, healthy man like my father was, young and healthy. They told him to take a wheelbarrow and a shovel and dig the hills, the dirt from the hills, and dump it in the valley. And when you go through Shanley Park, this is where he worked, with a shovel and pick and a wheelbarrow, and he straightened out and made those beautiful roads, which people drive and they don't know how much they got. It was a dollar a day. And with that dollar a day, he had to keep himself and send us with some money to live, a woman and four children in Europe, and save some money to bring him over. It sounds funny, isn't it?
It doesn't sound funny because I've heard so many similar stories, you know? So many stories like this. That the first time it's a shock, but then it's repeated, and people tell you. Mrs. Weinstein from Weinstein's Restaurant, you know her?
I don't know her personally.
She told me that her husband used to go to eat the free lunches. He wasn't a drinker, but he would go and he'd buy 5 cents a glass of beer, and he would eat the free lunch, and he would save 15 cents from his supper at the boarding house so that he could send for his family. I mean,
Listen, if there's an area... where nobody was ashamed of that condition because everybody was in it.
Where did he live?
He lived here on Fifth Avenue where people he paid $3 a week.
As a boarder?
A boarder. For room and board.
Mm-hmm.
He was fed into, so he had $2 left. with the $2, he had to give a contribution to his shoe, and he had to fix his shoes.
So it took him 5 years to save up, or 4 years to save up?
4 years to save up. Uh-huh. It's $200, I think, $200 or $300, because we were young children, they needed two whole tickets. Uh-huh. And two, and one half ticket and one none, because little sister was just 3 years old. And,
Were you part of a group when you came?
No.
Just your mother and the children?
Yeah. We found people, the groups, in the hundreds of them, maybe thousands.
On move. Describe to me how, if you remember, how you left your village and where your first stop was and how you got to the port, or which port you got to.
The first ones?
The first port, you know, from which you took the ship.
Oh, that, this is something. We left in the wintertime, right after Purim, or after Pesach.
Pesach would be spring?
Yeah.
Purim in those parts is still cold.
Yeah, very cold, Purim.
Yeah.
And we came to Subal, from that little town. We gave up, threw up everything, you know, left everything.
Yeah.
And we went across the border, we came into Germany.
Were you allowed to cross the border legally at that time?
Yeah, at that time, yes.
Aren't you the lady dog
A woman with four children were allowed to pass through. They opened the gates.
Because there were no men of army age. Right?
Yeah.
And then you crossed to Germany, yeah.
Germany, and we went as far as Istenberg. This is where you get deloused. You heard that before, didn't you? Had to go to bathhouse. And there, a man stood, a Jew, with a nice long beard, and he said, Kinderlach, can I bring you a sheikh? You get to hire your body, does any dance in that? You go out and try, hire a sheep's cart, hire a gill, or may your toes come and fuck us up again. Stay the man and cook, tally the man getting the gill, to the pet like a zombra, and they know any boy. To a sheikh, I say, not a golden and thin frugal dignity to have. So she took that with her, she put it in a cup of a little butter she got somewhere, where we ate, I don't know where. She put a $5 gold piece in that butter as she went to the bathhouse. When she came out, there was no rabbi, I was a cook for that. And no money, no sheep's cotton. And the poor young girls, they're crying. The less penny their parents or mother or father or widow gave them to cross, to go to a sister, to a friend, to an uncle in America, and they have nowhere to go to now. And they didn't know where to be, or where to sleep overnight, and what their next meal is going to be. And me, my mother, and the four children, freezing out in the cold. My little brother got a sore throat. And I had frozen feet.
The authorities who had this bathhouse, they didn't even do anything about it?
They care. It's the Germans, you know. Germans were Germans then, like they were during Hitler. Well, Mother had this $5 gold, which she thought the only thing to do is go back. Where we came from. We have to wait till we get more money. We can't go across. So she hired a German with a sleigh to take us back to Subak. She gave him the $5 gold piece, and all you could hear is the verfluchte Juden. And he took us over a little hill, and his sleigh turned over, and we were all underneath, in the snow, a big pile of snow. And he was verfluchte Juden. If I look to you, it'll sound terrible on there.
No, it's very interesting.
And we got to Subal. It wouldn't take us into Subal. We just got to the border of Germany. He says that's where he's allowed to go, only to this borderline. But he cannot go any further. And in that little town in Germany, there was a Jewish woman who lived there. I don't know how Mother found her, or she found Mother. She lived with her daughter there for centuries, I guess. I guess nobody even knew that she was a Jewish woman. She made her living where she had the speakeasy, what they call. Mm-hmm. People would come there, like a mailman, he'd come, and he'd go into a little dark room, take a drink and pay her, and go. And that's when men kept on coming in and out, in and out. She knew them all, greeted them, even in uniforms, they'd come to her. She was there with her daughter. And we stayed there about 2 months. And mother wrote to my father, of course, what happened. Now, he has no more money to send. And we're in a fix, stranded in Germany. What's going to be with us? Anyway, he went to the office where he bought the tickets. And he told him his plight. What shall he do? They trusted him and gave him the same kind of tickets on the payments. Whenever you have a little money, bring as much as you can. Mm-hmm. That's pretty awful. Mm-hmm. And he sent us new tickets. And he went to a lunchman that he had here, and he told him his story, and he gave him $20, another gave him $10, that she should have a little money in our man. Mm-hmm. And again, we're on our way. This time already, she goes through another route, so she wouldn't have to go through this. Mm-hmm. Bathhouse. Mm. And she came to a town, I don't remember the name, but this is where they go across the English Channel. And that was an experience in itself.
So you went to England first?
Yeah. I don't know who advised her.
Oh, many did.
I don't know how.
In fact, I read someplace that sometimes it was cheaper to take the ship from England.
Yeah, that's right. In Liverpool, we got the ship. Mm-hmm. But that crossing of the channel was some experience which I'll remember sometime. Night when I wake up, I think I'm going to cry.
Because of the nausea and sickness.
Oh, people were laying on the floor in a terrible, terrible state of there. It was so terrible, the smell itself of the
vomit,
that it was terrible. And after we got there, the people had to be carried out bodily to put on the deck and cleaned up a little bit so they can get off of that ship. Anyway, this is over with. Everything got set down. You begin.
You're in Liverpool.
We're in Liverpool. Liverpool, we went to some house, and we just came in time when the ship was leaving from Liverpool to Canada. And we missed that boat. Mm. We missed the ship. And we had to go back to where we came from, to that house. There we had to stay about 10 days until another ship was being filled. And on that ship is a tragic occurrence. That ship was a stirring animal, the cows and...
A cow ship.
A cow ship, they were.
Cattle ship.
Stirrage is what they call it. And there was many people on there, many people.
More. The one that you were on, finally.
The one I was on, finally, coming to Canada. And there, we were caught in terrific storms at sea. And they had to cover the whole boat with a tarpaulin and anchor the ship until the storm was over. By the time the storm was over, there was no more food on the ship. And we went hungry. And again, another storm came right after that. And another. And one time, I remember clearly, the men was saying, killing. Women were crying, babies were crying, but she didn't stop. Do like he's heard me. Pull down the crowd, maybe. Anyway, the ship was able to go over to an island, which they went over to about four islands, to buy ready-made bread. Little bones like that, they only want American money. Who has American money? Whoever had rubles, they gave it. But they wanted dollars. Had a fight with them. They were on a skiff, and we were up high on the ship. They had to throw the money, and they throw you out a bull color. Since we need at least three, four, five bull color, how much would it last? We swallowed it whole, but we were so hungry. There was barrels full of crackers, and the barrel on the inside and out was full of white worms, like I can look at it now. And the little children went to the barrel, pulled out a cracker, and I wiped the cracker on their clothes and killed the worms off and ate the crackers. One day they were serving a soup of potatoes with a shell, with a skin, and sand on it yet. The way it was brought, they took it from the field. And a man's plate wasn't full enough. When I was little, he put mine in a cup. And he was looking and asking me while his plate was on the side, and he poured the soup under my collar. This is a sight scene.
Yeah. And on the same ship, were there also first class and second class passengers?
I don't even know that. Steerage. Everybody alike. They had barrels of herring, and they opened the barrel of herring and dumped it on the floor, and all the people were grabbing it, the herring. That was
they
thick
treated
with salt.
Them like animals.
It was thick with salt, and they ate it, and there was no water. Finally, we got to the end of the rope. We got there after how many, around Purim we left, and we came here in July.
Mm.
March, April, May, June, July. That's how long our trip.
Now, where did you arrive in Canada, and how did you get to Pittsburgh from Canada?
To Liverpool.
From Liverpool to where in Canada?
Well, Liverpool, oh, no, in Canada is, name of one or two.
Montreal. And then from Montreal, you went by train?
Yeah. Montreal, we went by train, and we came direct here to Pittsburgh.
Mm.
And Father already rented two rooms for $10 a month. And with one bed, and we children all slept on the bare floors.
Do you remember where these two rooms were? In the hill?
Fifth Avenue.
Not in the hill. Not in the hill district.
Well, it's a hill district. You said on Fifth Avenue, near Dinwiddie Street, if you're
in
Cranbrook.
Oh, yeah.
On a third floor, a baker's shop in the basement. Ah, it was a...
Do you remember your first day in Pittsburgh? The very first day.
Oh, yeah. Sure. My father didn't know what station we were coming on. So he ran from one station to the other. Finally, we got there. We had the address, and we showed it to a man, and he was, I don't know whether he was colored or was so black, from the coal mine he was going or somewhere. And she said she never saw so many black men in all our lives. It was the men. It seemed like all men were the working men. It was right near the Union Depot we came, Union Station. And they all looked so black. So, see, in a long, suddenly they came and was a band of Schwarz. It's a band of Schwarz. After did I say it, was Schwarz. Anyway, we found the address where Papa came. I always came out of there, remember, looking for us.
In other words, you came to the address before he got you to his...
Yeah, and the lady there where he stayed in board, she took us in, and she was very friendly. I want to mention her name, Mrs. Martin, was her name, still remember. And poor thing, she's not here no more. But she was very kind to us. She made a nice lunch for us. Mm-hmm. We came early in the morning, about 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And she got cottage cheese and butter and white bread.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a feast.
You still remember?
Oh my, yeah. And coffee she had, And the children, she gave milk, which I never drank milk.